Welcome back to the podcast, readers. This is part two of a conversation Joe Reed from Decider, Katie Rich from Vanity Fair, and Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks had without me. I was sick last week when they recorded. Here they are speaking about Animalisa and a series of recommendations on streaming for you to complete your film year.
Going into our next movie, I feel like such a bummer when I talk about Anomalisa because people love it so much. And it's like on like number one on people's top 10 lists or whatever. And this was another one that I saw in Toronto. And like, granted, I saw it in the middle of a four movie blitz. But it did not resonate with me very much at all, in a way that, like, I guess I'm not surprised to see it resonating with other people because it's so singular. It's, you know, it's animated, it's Charlie Kaufman, it's sort of, you know, there's an ennui angle to it. Sorry.
It's detailed in a way, like the amount of work put into these puppets, like it's really incredible to look at, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, you see
so,
why people
I mean,
really want to, like, appreciate the work that went into it.
It feels very sort of lovingly handcrafted, and Kaufman always sort of puts this, you know, personal touch. And it's not just Charlie Kaufman; it's Duke Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Am I getting that? Yeah. Duke Johnson's co-director.
The co-director, and on a basic sort of level, without getting too much into it, it's the story of a man who goes away on a business trip, and he's sort of afflicted with this kind of worldview where everybody sounds exactly the same. Everybody sounds exactly like actor Tom Noonan. And men, women, whatever, whoever he meets, they all have the exact same voice. They all seem to be oddly obsessed with him. The whole movie is this kind of, you know, skewed perspective kind of thing. And then he meets a woman who has her own voice, has the voice of Jennifer Jason Leigh, and he's incredibly drawn to her, and things sort of flow out from there. I think Nick and I definitely talked about this when we saw it at Toronto, but Katie, I think your opinion on it is the one I know least, so I'm going to go to you first.
I think I might like this movie a little bit better than you guys do, because I did walk out of it surrounded by a bunch of people who then put it as their number one of the year, being like, I don't know, guys, maybe it's not the thing ever, and then felt like a monster. So I know that feeling very well. But I think the idea of having Tom Noonan be the voice of everybody else is really brilliant and very, like, one of the things that Charlie Kaufman, it was one of the only people who would do on film. Because I think all of us, even if we haven't gotten to the point of this character, have had the moment where we're like, oh, everyone in the world is a pain in the ass with me. Even if just briefly.
Are you thinking that right now?
I'm thinking all of you are monsters. And
yeah, what do we sound like to you, Katie?
You all sound like Tom Noonan. What? Have you not always sounded like Tom Noonan? I love the specificity of this really bland hotel that, I've stayed in many bland hotels like that. I've like thought back about things in this movie since I've seen it. Like the details within the world of it and within kind of this kind of sad, but like it's not sad in like an, you know, The Office like making fun of bland suburbia way. Like it's much more specific than that. Like everyone's kind of participating in this thing in the world that is not beautiful, but is kind of serving this exact function, which is what, you know, any hotel like this is going to do. And I like Jennifer Jason Leigh. Where the character goes is where I kind of run into trouble with the movie. And I don't know if we're going to be concerned about spoilers or anything, but we can get into that later. I think where the main problem I have with it is that I think there's a lot of good ideas in establishing the world of this, but it doesn't go far enough with like where it's going with all of this. Like it's establishing this world in which everyone has the same voice and you kind of get where it's going and you get what it's saying about this character, but then where it takes that character, I don't think it lets him off the hook the way that I think some people have argued. Like I think this movie is being pretty hard on this main guy who thinks everyone in the world is boring except for him and this one woman. But it's not examining him in either a deep enough way or an interesting enough way. Like it's another movie about a white guy with problems. I think Nick, you've talked about this. Like I don't need to see any more of these movies about a white guy dealing with his ennui. And it like it does it in a lot of inventive ways, but then the theme of the movie, which surprises me for Charlie Kaufman because his movies usually take like 10 thematic turns, it kind of stalls out in a way, having had all of these great ideas and a really interesting setup without kind of finishing it.
Totally.
No, I agree with you in that the follow through, because I think I was sort of laughing along with a lot of the gags in the early parts. Like, Noonan's able to do this really deadpan thing with his voice. It's very funny. I thought there were probably three too many gags where, like, the sole gag is that it's a woman with his voice. Like, that got defeated a lot. But otherwise, I really I liked it. I think the voices are good. I know, Nick, you maybe remember this. When I saw the movie and then I, you know, I had to run out, so I didn't get to stay for the end credits. So I didn't see who the voices were. And I got back to the apartment later on and I was talking to Nick and I was like, okay, who played the voice of all the people? I couldn't get it. And he's like, Tom Noonan. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, and the voice of the woman, it was driving me crazy. And he goes, Jennifer Jason Leigh. I'm like, of course. Okay. And I'm like, okay, but it was Karen Hines as the main guy, right? Oh. I got that right away. And Nick just goes, David Thewlis. And I was just like, damn it.
You've invested so by my, that's why you don't
keen,
like it.
Keen listening skills and anomalies.
That's just
point.
That they became their characters. They didn't just perform them. Like, they right. they were them. What a bunch of chameleons. So,
yeah. So what were, Nick, what you sort of had, I think, when we talked about it, sort of this kind of flat response in terms of what exactly Kaufman is going for beyond this sort of low-grade, you know, bummed, like he's just bummed that the world isn't as interesting as he wants it to be.
Yeah, I just feel like Katie said exactly what I would have hoped to say, like that I liked a lot of the potential in it, and I liked the idea that we were going to meet this Jennifer Jason Leigh character who will not have any extraordinary qualities at all, but the movie seemed capable of getting interested in her because or despite that. But it never felt that interested in her, and it feels like, it just feels to me like once a conversation around a movie sometimes comes around to, like, but does it know that the lead man is totally solipsistic and caught up in his own mind? Like, but I think it knows it. Like, okay, is that a huge victory? You know, like let's just take for granted that somebody should know that. I felt similarly. I just didn't take it anywhere interesting enough. And then it starts to have weird scenes, like when he goes into the bowels of the hotel, and it felt like and has that. I think it turns out to be a dream sequence, right, where he goes into the crazy office and there's the big hole in the floor, and that all felt like kind of Kaufman-y wheel spinning to me. That also had some familiar jokes that didn't add a whole lot, and I just couldn't. I know there were things I liked about it, but I just felt mostly really disappointed. I'd really hoped for a lot more.
Yeah, when you're talking about how it doesn't seem that interested in Lisa, the Jennifer Jason Leigh character, like, I think it's better to her than the main character is, which, again, is like getting into the what's the movie, what's the character. But it doesn't give her an inner life in this way. Right. Like, it really surprised me that it left her that way. Like, it wants her to be this, like, very normal person to, like, prove that this guy has been, like, reading the world as a bunch of bland Tom Noonans when, you know, she is, like, they're all just like her. Like, you know, they have value even if they're not fascinating. But it doesn't really care about what she feels. Like, she just has, like, you know, pretty normal reactions to everything that's happening to her. And then she's out of the story, and she doesn't need to be a big part of the story, but it's her view on all of this. Like, her interiority could have, you know, given so much to put this guy's weird perspective on the world in perspective, and it doesn't do that
well. And she starts reacting to things in a way that feels prescribed from him, that she sort of starts, developing along the lines of how he's always sort of feared, or how he's always experienced relationships with other people, right? So it starts to feel like everything she's doing isn't even coming from her, whoever the her that even exists in this movie. And it made me think of, after the fact, it made me think of a movie like Sing Back to King New York, which was another movie that I sort of walked out and was, like, more cold towards than other people. I've since come around on it more. I think, you know, whatever. My whole psychosis about Sing Back to King New York is up topic for a 3-hour podcast of its own. But,
well, next week we'll tackle that.
That's a movie where everybody, all the characters sort of seem to spring forth from the mind of this one character, and all the women in that movie are kind of controlled by him. You know, there's that sort of, you know, structure upon structure of how much of this is being written by the Philip Seymour Hoffman character. And yet all of those women constantly are like breaking out with their own agency in mm-hmm. these very sort of like, you know, odd ways. And Michelle Williams, I'm thinking of, and Samantha Morton, and like Diane Wiest, and like all of these performances, where so much of what I loved about that movie was about how these female characters start out being sort of these puppets of his production, and yet are constantly sort of rebelling against that. And Anomalisa doesn't have that level to it for me.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it sparks enough creativity. And if, and I understand that it's kind of facile to say that if it wasn't animated, this would be a nightmare of a movie and nobody would ever go see it or like it, because the point is that it's animated. I mean, I understand that. But yeah, it does feel like it'd be a nightmare if this was a live-action yeah. movie and nobody would like it. Like, it just doesn't have nearly enough to say or enough originality that is generated from this idea.
Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, more power to the people who love it. But because I do feel like there is, you know, this is an act of creativity on Kaufman's part in terms of the format of the movie. And like, it's animated in some really fun ways. But I'm with you, Nick. I think I kept sort of thinking about like, what is this story that we're getting? Like, why? What is the point of all of this kind of like sad faced man? Like, I don't know.
Well, it's, you know, the point is the reaction people have had to it, I guess. Like, there's a great depth to it that people are finding. And yeah. I mean, I'm not like simplifying it as white guy problems doesn't feel fair to me, but there, like,
no, I'm with you there.
But there's definitely like a level in which people are seeing that and like seeing, you know, so I see like what there is to identify with this. Like, I've stayed in crappy hotel rooms and like thought the world was worthless before. Like, it, you don't have to be a white guy to have that. But yeah, I mean, right. there's a level of identification in this and the humor in it, and that, you know, there's a lot put into it for you to kind of reflect back on. But I guess for some of us, it doesn't, you kind of get to the end of it and you're like, huh, well, if that's what you want me to walk out of this with, then not enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys follow Emily Yoshida?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who, right, for, yeah, she had that amazing series of tweets about the one I'm looking at right yeah. now is, I think Anomalisa will be my new Lost in Translation, the movie I have to forget all my peers like so I can have civil relations with them. Like, and there is a way in which, like, even conceding the things that I did like about it, you know, visually and some of the, I don't remember the jokes very well, but I do remember thinking it was funny, maybe especially in the first half hour or so. But Katie, when you were saying that this shouldn't just be reducible to like white guy stuff, I realized that I would have loved just one cutaway scene between Lisa and the woman that she's there with mm-hmm. in their hotel, just because that seemed like one of the most interesting relationships in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with why one of them was picked completely arbitrarily over the other, but then also the like, why in the world do you keep hanging out with him? And just having some sense that they share in their room completely separately from him the same stuff that he's going through, so it's not reducible to him, would have gone kind of far for me.
Yeah, because I don't think that would take away from the movie's kind of sense that it's all about this one guy's worldview and how he's been so skewed. Like, I don't think you, a cutaway to them, you'd lose anything from that. You just kind of completely. Get, you get a film, not just this guy's point of view.
It feels like it'd be, not to always go back to Carol, but it would be like the Harge Abbey scene, right? Like, we can step away from everybody that this is completely absorbed in, and it actually just fills out the world for a second and go right back to where we started.
Honestly, if they wanted to cut to just a Harge Abbey scene in this movie, like, I would be also fine.
And just Kyle Chandler and Sarah Paulson showed up.
Yeah. Just like for no reason, not animated, like live action.
Now that I think of it, that might have improved Magic Mike XXL.
Tom Noonan just says, "I can't help you with that."
Yeah, like honestly, pick a movie from 2015 that would not be improved by that. I defy it because I think you can't. I think it's a universal truth. So, who wants to do another reader question? I do.
Me.
Okay, this one comes from Mary, who asks, which great performances from 2015 stood out for coming from weaker films or poorly written characters? Much of the year's best work has come from films that are working so well with their casts in terms of writing, direction, co-stars, etc., but who carved a killer performance out of nowhere? Nick, why don't you go first?
So it feels like the quick go-to would be Cate Blanchett in Truth. But I think we talked about that a little bit. So I was going to say Dakota Johnson in 50 Shades of Grey, who I think is fantastic. And I don't even think the movie's necessarily a mess. Yeah, I liked the movie fine, so it's not exactly out of nothing. But even the things I liked about the movie were mostly not particularly actor-driven, right? It's even hard to think of who's in that movie, except for the two leads. Everything she kind of suggests about an interior to that character and a pretty particular sense of irony and there's just a lot of layering she provides there. I'm sure in conversation with her director, which may not be the spirit of what Mary's asking, but she's great.
Yeah, I think I like that you and Guy Lodge are very on the Dakota Johnson train, and I like that that's being kept alive, if not for the movie itself, which I was fairly cold on. But she hosted the funniest SNL episode of this season. So I want to give her props and something. Even can.
Nick, you are almost convincing me to see 50 Shades of Grey, which I still have not done.
Mm.
Oh, it's worth just like an afternoon on, you know, on demand or whatever, Katie.
All right. I miss when I really had my cold going strong. I missed my chance to watch it. That would have been perfect.
Yeah, wait for the next cold. I think that's a good point. My pick is Viola Davis in Black Hat.
Oh, boy.
A movie that I know a few people sort of stuck up for, but I feel like it's really uneven and it sort of deflates itself in its final half hour. Viola Davis plays a agent of some sort, FBI, national security, whatever. Like, it's, you know, honestly, whatever. But she's so good and projects such, like, an interesting, like, inner life for her character, where, like, they don't really, like, she's not the main character, and the movie never really pretends that she is. But she's so the center of every single scene she's in, and like everything sort of is drawn to her. And anytime she's sort of like running point on whatever like mission or objective they're on, it's just, you want to do nothing but sort of like follow this character through, you know, whatever she's going to. And she's fantastic in a very like purely kind of functionary role. She excels. And it made me realize that like, freaking love it when actors do that, when they take a role that is just there to like fill up narrative in the screen or just like, you know, just be there to push the story forward, and to be that compelling doing so is awesome to me. I really, really loved it. Did you guys see that movie?
That is a fantastic choice. And given that, if I may be negative for a second, that Chris Hemsworth seems so amazingly bad in it.
Yeah.
And there's no other performance in the movie that suggests that Michael Mann is really interested in guiding performance, which is something maybe we could accuse a lot of his movies of, I would say.
Yeah.
So she's clearly doing it, you know?
Yeah. Joe, I have great news for you, which is that Viola Davis is playing another purely functionary role in Suicide Squad. So
okay.
I think it's that, not Batman versus Superman, as well, with Holly Hunter.
Right. She's in Suicide Squad. You're
okay.
Right.
I'm getting my DC movies wasting really talented actresses.
Yeah, we saw her in the trailer for Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So, get what is the pick? So, I feel like I'm the only person on the planet who saw Everest, which really... good, okay.
Me too.
Oh, wow. So, we're the three. I thought Jason Clarke was really great in this movie. Like, the movie's not a complete disaster. It's kind of muddled in a lot of ways that...
I agree.
Is what's going to happen when it's about a climbing accident that no one actually remembers that much about because they all had, like, altitude sickness. Yes. But Jason Clarke made this great argument for, like, leading man status, which I think he's had for a while. Like, he's got a movie with Blake Lively coming up. Like, his breakthrough kind of always feels right around the corner.
Katie, can I tell you a Jason Clarke movie that was definitely from 2015?
Oh, God.
Terminator Genesis.
Aha! How was he in that?
Didn't see it.
I wonder if he's breaking my whole theory and he was completely terrible in that. But maybe. I thought he wasn't. Excuse me. So anyway, I think he's great in it. He's got this like great earthy, like heroic quality to him. He's like, he's kind of the hero of the movie. The fact that he has all these scenes with Keira Knightley, who's stuck at home on a phone, is weird, but yeah, that's the movie's problem, not his. Yeah. So yeah, Jason Clarke, may a better 2016 await you.
Excellent. So speaking of heading into 2016, I think the three of us spent our winter breaks, for lack of a better term, winter vacation, what I did on my winter vacation, catching up on movies from 2015 that we may have missed, particularly heading into the all-important list-making season. I have sort of taken advantage of the fact that I didn't have to write a top 10 list in December, that I'm just going to wait until the Oscars and do mine then, because if they get to wait that long, so do I. So I'm sort of accumulating movies from 2015 that I may have missed, and we thought we might throw out some recommendations because we were maybe not as high on the two wide releases that we talked about today. What recommendations from your catch-up pile would you recommend to the listeners? So I'm going to go to Katie first.
I would say Phoenix, which is the one that I got on the catch-up pile and totally blew me away. But I think I've talked about that on this podcast.
Also, though, Katie, I saw it for the first time day before yesterday, and it's so freaking
awesome.
It's
so good.
And people had talked about the ending of it, so I was waiting for a twist, and it's not quite that, but it's really, like, I won't go into it anymore, but, like, it's a real good ending. But also, it's a real good movie up till that ending, and, like, Nina Haas as the main character is astoundingly good. Yeah. And
the guy opposite her, who I keep calling German Kyle Chandler, I don't know his name.
Dominic Cooper, yeah.
German Dominic Cooper. Yeah, he's really, really making the facial hair work.
Yeah, totally. No, I think the movie's got such a good build, and I was watching it with friends, and we were sort of like, we kept being like, God, why is she with this guy? He's such a jerk. And just sort of, there's this great sort of, like, it really, like, keeps an audience, you know, you're so on her side, and you're watching her sort of interact with this guy who is her... I mean, I don't know. I never know how much of the plot of this movie I should even talk about, but just like, it's a post-World War II movie, and Nina Haas plays a woman who emerged from the war and the camps with bandages on her face, and she's had facial reconstruction surgery. So it lends itself very much to this kind of noir aspect of it makes her more of a femme fatale type, even though that's not really her in like spirit or intention, but like it gives her all of those trappings because she's literally this mystery woman who is unrecognizable to the people in her life from before. It's very, very intriguing. Nick, you've seen this?
Yeah, a couple times, and I taught it in that film group that I lead.
And awesome.
One of the women in the film group, you know, none of them had ever heard of it before I assigned it, and one of them started our group by saying, "This is one of the 10 best movies I've ever seen in my life."
Oh,
and I'm
66. Wow.
All right.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Boy, were they into it.
Yeah. Oh, it's really, really fantastic. It's very good.
Yeah, and I think it's on Netflix. I did not watch it on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay, it is streaming on Netflix. That's where I saw it.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's an easy recommendation.
Easy recommendation.
Wait, what was I going to... I wasn't going to say that because I thought we had talked about it, but now I can't remember the second thing that I chose, so maybe it's just Phoenix.
I sidetracked you.
No, it's great. I love talking about this movie.
I am the...
I finally watched Look of Silence. It's great. I'm sorry that it took me so long to watch it, but it's about Indonesian genocide, so of course it took me a long time to watch it, but it's worth it.
It's so good. It's so, so, so good.
I think I like it better than The Act of Killing.
I do, too. Yes, I agree with you.
All right.
That was the movie I saw at Toronto 2 years ago, right after I saw Mommy. So as Nicola attested, I cried all the way through Mommy. And then I went and I climbed all of the steps to the very back row of the Scotiabank Theater to watch The Look of Silence, and was just like systematically devastated for also another further.
I hope you like I don't know, like went home and watched old Friends episodes or something.
I just bought for like 3 days.
I bought bags of chocolate on my walk home. Yeah,
it we was, found you in that Tim Hortons like the next Saturday. Just
just Canadian Kit Kat bars, like as far as you can see. Yeah, my major one besides Phoenix, which I did see, I saw Goodnight Mommy. So I basically did the facial bandaged heroin double feature. Goodnight Mommy is a German movie. It takes place in this sort of like isolated home in the woods in, I believe it's Germany.
I think it might be Austria, but that
it might be Austria. I'm a terrible person when it comes to European geography.
They're German speaking. Come on.
There were trees. They were, yeah, exactly. What am I, a linguist? So this woman comes home and her face is all bandaged up and you can tell it's from an accident and she's got the twin boys who are sort of freaked out by the way she looks. And then as the movie moves along, there's more to it than that. And the way that they sort of regard their mother very suspiciously, and then the way that the mother keeps the boys at length, particularly the one boy. It's, again, a movie that I don't want to get into too much plot-wise because I think it's best experienced when you know not a ton about it. I hadn't even seen a trailer. There's a scene in the movie that literally made me scream out loud.
Oh my God.
And it's in the trailer, so if you can avoid the trailer, do it. Because if you can see that scene cold, it's much better.
Are we talking about Lips?
We're talking about, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was not okay at that moment.
That too. I'm talking about I'll tell you after. I don't even want to get into it.
Okay. I think I have to save my scary movie energy for The Witch. I don't know if I can survive Goodnight Mommy. I don't know if guys.
It's so good. Yeah, I know. I have such a high tolerance for that kind of thing. So, one of the films submitted for the foreign language Oscar, but it was not on the short list, surprisingly enough. All of the things that I had seen previously that were in contention for the foreign language film Oscar, that was this and like The Wave and something else. And like genre wise, of course, they were not picked for the short list, but I sort of, you know, was a little crestfallen by that. But yeah, Goodnight Mommy, highest of recommendations. That one is available. I got that on Netflix on the disc plan, but like I think you can rent it probably on Amazon for $4 or something like that. So do it. Nick.
But be ready. Like I saw that in the theater and there was a group of women. Did I tell this story already? There was like 9 or 10 women who clearly were rendezvousing as a new friend group. Like everybody knew a couple people. They seemed like they were maybe in their 40s, but they were all like introducing each other to each other when it started. And of all movies to meet new people, and clearly some of them had a completely different sense of what a movie called Goodnight Mommy would be about.
Right.
So, like all of us were audibly wailing at several moments, and the theater just made this like silent contract with itself that everybody can be as loud as they need to be. This shit's hard to get through.
Yeah.
But those women are never going to see each other again. Like there was a lot of recrimination at the end, and like I really wish I'd understood what you were taking me to, friend who made me come to this, and it just excellent. Shattered the human community. Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh. Nice.
Man, that was hard.
So, what are you coming to us with, Nick?
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was totally delightful, as I heard it was. Yeah, 1 minute and 52 seconds into it, Derek said, if you don't buy this on Blu-ray, I will never forgive you.
Ah! Wait, Nick, how did you, is it streaming anywhere? What did you, how'd you see it?
I got it from Redbox, so it must be everywhere.
Oh man, I should go find it. I don't
even and know then to preserve my relationship, I did buy it on Blu-ray, but,
It's so handsome looking and also fun.
It's funny. It's so funny and clever.
Yeah. Armie Hammer, who knew?
Elizabeth Debicki, great. I think Alicia Vikander's kind of not great in it, but
she's my least favorite of the principal actors, but I still think she brings some stuff to it.
I couldn't even work myself up that high, but she wasn't, you know, but there's so much to enjoy about the movie, it almost didn't matter.
Yeah.
I really liked another comedy was Results. I thought was pretty fun. Did you guys see that one? The sort of personal trainer comedy with.
I did. I didn't love it.
Okay.
It's like a, like Wesley Morris put it in like his like top 10 of the year. Like
he it's on a few top 10 lists.
Yeah. So I've it's been on my radar, but I haven't managed to see it yet.
Yeah, I thought that I liked the character work in that, and again, it's not one that like sort of breaks the mold in any particular way, but I liked watching those actors, many of whom are cast in ways they're not usually, do something else. This weird Sundance sci-fi movie called Advantageous.
Oh.
This sci-fi film about an Asian woman who was also the co-writer with the director, who's also an Asian woman. So a really cool collaboration between the writer-director and the actor-writer.
Yeah.
And it's overlaps in a lot of its plot conceits with The Congress that Robin Wright was in last year. But about a woman who's probably going to lose a job as the public face of a company. And maybe the only way that she'll get to keep her job and support her kid is to get radical plastic surgery that will make her look totally different. Okay. And so there's a, and we're in a kind of not particularly marked near-ish future. And part of this also requires her to look less Asian. And so the reasons why she's feeling pressure to maybe do it are a lot of what the movie's about, but the movie may even try to be about too many things, but it's really challenging and interesting.
So what you're saying is we're all recommending a movie that has something to do with radical facial reconstruction.
Intervention, yes.
That's amazing. We really have come together on that. That's great.
And The Look of Silence is about optometry? That counts, right?
Yeah.
That's facial.
Listen. Yes. Totally. I'm with you. I'm totally
We should tell people to see it. It's only about optometry. That's the whole point of the movie.
Yes. Did you see that new optometrist movie, The Look of Silence? It's amazing.
So,
that's how you do it. That's
so encouraging
how we sell.
Those people get glasses, better lives. It's really uplifting.
Yes.
Can I ask quickly about one that I didn't like, but Joe, I think you did, and I think we both saw it recently, which was Hungry Hearts, which I couldn't make
head
or tail of.
I found it very unsettling and creepy in a good way. That's the Adam Driver movie. I saw it at the Tribeca Film Festival this year. He and his wife, they're newlyweds, they're new parents, and the wife becomes ever more obsessively sort of frightened of the world and protective of her child and paranoid about the kinds of foods that she will and won't eat, feed the child. So it becomes the sort of like harrowing parental nightmare for Driver's character. And it won acting awards, I want to say, at Venice.
For both of them, yeah.
Mm.
Both of them. I think Driver in particular is fantastic at this sort of like time period of, you know, everybody is super into him for Star Wars. I think it would be interesting if, you know, people sort of like sought that one out. But you weren't feeling it, Nick.
I wasn't, but that's why I was curious to hear
a plot. I just found it very sort of effectively creepy and plotty in ways that sort of belie the atmospherics of it, and then atmospheric in a way that sort of runs counter to this sort of, you know, we've gotta save the baby kind of like urgency of plot that I found really effective. It's sort of cliche to just be like the movie cast a spell on me, but like I think it did. I sort of emerged from that movie kind of, you know, weak-kneed a little bit.
It does take, if you watch it with three people, like I would say a group of four is enough to guarantee there will be split reactions.
Yeah.
Because it goes out on some really crazy limbs. Like there's these like really ostentatious distortions of the image to communicate some of the hysteria that's happening inside the house. So just totally bug-eyed lenses and crazy camera movements and
that apartment too has this feel of just being this impossibly tall and skinny apartment where just the walls seem to be about 2 feet apart from each other, and yet it goes like up, up, up into infinity. It just has that kind of claustrophobic feel to it. I felt it was,
but that just makes it Adam Driver shaped. I think
yes,
he can move in spaces like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I would recommend it, but to your point, I would say, you know, be prepared for something that's not easy. Or not. I think that's also another one that is available to stream. I did a whole article.
That's how I saw it, so it is, yeah.
On Decider about movies that are sort of culty that you can stream now that maybe Nathaniel would be kind enough to link to on the page for this if you want to read it, because there's a bunch of stuff. Goodnight Mommy is on that list, and Phoenix is on that list, and Hungry Hearts is on that list, so...
Isn't Kumiko the Treasure Hunter on that list, too?
It is. It definitely is.
That was one I saw recently and completely loved.
Yeah, really interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So, where can the people find your work, Nick Davis?
Oh, at nicksflickpicks.com.
You're doing some fun and really interesting things, particularly with the new year, right?
So are you, Joe Reed.
Yeah, I would highly recommend going to Nick's Flick Picks and seeing... the Oscar Best Actress stuff that's coming down the pike. I'm very interested to read stuff. And you've done your top 100 favorites. Is that the terminology?
Finally finished. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. Very, very, lots of very good reading from Nick. Katie, where can the people find you?
I'm at vanityfair.com doing my thing. Not any giant projects like these two. But you know, who knows? The year is young.
Yeah,
you just run a magazine.
Well, I run a website attached to a magazine that many people may or may not know exists. But, you know, tough work.
Tough work, exactly. Yep. You can find my stuff at decider.com. And I think that's it.
Should we sign out with our thoughts about Batman Returns or White Oleander?
Yes. You mean supporting actress Michelle Pfeiffer in both of those movies? Yes.
Yeah.
Happy holiday! Happy post holidays! Happy 2016! Happy
yeah!
2016, woohoo! Year of the wild boar. Year of the bison liver. It's the year of the bison liver.
Year of the bear rape.
Yeah. Bye bye.